Love Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hippie Witch, magic for a new age. I'm your host, Joanna DeVoe, and this is a happy, hippie place where magic with a K meets the law of attraction.
That's awesome. That is the first time I have done that in 58 episodes. I jumped the gun. I heard the little countdown. Your show will begin in 5 seconds. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and I got all jacked up and didn't give my little jingle time to do its thing. Anyway, thanks for joining me for episode 58 of Hippie Witch, Magic for a New Age. My name is Joanna DeVoe, and I am the kooky creatrix behind Kick-Ass Witch, Putting the K in Magic, and of course, Hippie Witch, the show you are listening to right now. I also have a free ebook by that name. Say it with me, Hippie Witch, Peace, Love, and All That Good Shit. And you can pick up a copy of that at www.joannadevoe.com. And I have put a link to that back on the description page for this episode at Blog Talk Radio. So today's show is all about astrotheology. And the thing about astrotheology is that it is often presented as the truth. And I feel that the title that I gave this episode kind of presents it in that way as well. I called this show Astrotheology and the Original Passover. But I just want to say here now for the record that regarding religion or spirituality, as far as I'm concerned, no one holds a monopoly on the truth. Truth is subjective. And when it comes down to it, this is really just my opinion. It's an opinion that I share with many scholarly folks, but so what? That doesn't make it any more true than any other scholarly presented theology out there. Not that my presentation is going to be scholarly. Far from it. It will be very giggly, as it already has been. But if you like a scholarly approach, I am sure that you can easily find it online, and I will give you some references for you later on in the show if you want to do some digging about what astrotheology is beyond today's little 30-minute giggly segment here. So here it is, my big fat opinion on what was the original Passover. And according to my calendar, today is Passover. So I thought that was perfect timing. The original Passover was, and still is, the time of year that the sun passes over the equator on its way back to the northern hemisphere. It marks the arrival of spring for us on the northern half of the globe, and that is it. There. Done. Show over. You have now been enlightened. That's what the original Passover is. That's all I have to say today. And our calendar is all wonky. We don't really keep time anymore by these celestial occurrences, so today might be Passover on your date book like it is on mine. But back in the day, this Passover would have actually happened on the day, or actually the week, that the sun passed over the equator and, you know, spring sprung. So, and if you read my newsletter last night, if you read it last night or this morning, you know that something weird and pretty cool just happened to me. And this is going to seem like one of my random tangents at first, but bear with me, because I think that I can tie this back around to astrotheology in my own kooky roundabout way. So as I explained in last night's newsletter about the eclipse and the full moon and how people are talking about, you know, all these weird energies that are happening right now, something strange did happen to me. And it's very cool and magical in my opinion. And I have to give you a little bit of backstory here to have this make sense. So you may or may not know about me that my biological father died before I was born. And his name was Joe, and I did not know this. I was raised by another awesome guy named Rick Hickson, and we had our little family, me, my sister, my mom, and my dad, and I had no idea that my dad was not my real dad, my biological dad, until this kind of bratty girl from my church told me one day, you know, your dad isn't your real dad. Your real dad died in a plane crash before you were born. And this was very shocking to me and traumatic, and it turned out to be true. But I really loved my dad, and I didn't want to hurt his feelings, and I had a lot of weird, too big for an 8-year-old. That's when I found this out, that too big of feelings to, like, cope with and handle, and for some reason I was worried that if I asked about Joe or talked about him that it would hurt my dad's feelings. So I just kind of held this in like a secret for a lot of years, and it wasn't until my 20s that my mom gave me a grocery bag that was full of whatever she had from her life with Joe before I was born. So there were like newspaper clippings of his death and pictures of them together, which I would stare at, you know, and try to see myself in, which was really interesting because when I was a kid, I was the oddball in the family. My family used to joke that they found me under a rock. I was very, very different from everybody else in my family, and I looked different. I was the only one with blue hair, blue eyes, and really, like, white blonde hair. So it made a lot of sense. And then when I got pictures of Joe and I'm looking at him, I'm like, oh, a family member that I actually look like. And my son looks like him, too, which is pretty cool. And there was, like, a rock and roll album. He was a drummer, so there's, like, a vinyl record that I have with that little collection of things. But that's kind of all I have of him, and maybe some random memories that my mom has shared with me, but not a lot of information. And I've gotten curious lately, more and more so, about Joe, and I want to know what we have in common, you know, why, because I'm so different from my family, like, did any of this come from Joe or from his family? I'm interested in finding out about my ancestry more, you know, just all kinds of stuff like that. And so I've been thinking about it, and not this Sunday, but the Sunday before, I told my mom, we were on Skype, and I said, I really want to get a hold of Joe's family. I want to find them. And how would I go about doing that? And she's like, honestly, I have no idea. Because their last name is Williams, it's kind of like looking for a needle in a haystack. It's a very popular name, and they have very, like, standard names, like Jack and Joe. And so she's like, I have no idea. I don't know where they live. I wouldn't even know where to begin to look. And then I'm kid you not, 4 days later, this is so magical, 4 days later, Jack Williams, Joe's brother, found my mom on Facebook and contacted her. And it just gives me chills just to think about it. I mean, it's truly, if that's not magic, I don't know what is. And he wants to talk to me and connect with me. So I haven't done that yet because it makes me get all, you know, I just start like bawling my head off when I think about it. This all happened very fast, but I will gather myself and contact him at some point. But he sent some pictures, which was really cool, pictures I've never seen before, and more recordings of the rock and roll that he made with his family. Joe was in a band with his brothers and his dad called the Invaders. It was very cool to get to hear him, and as opposed to just seeing pictures of him. It helps, you know, put the whole idea of this Joe character together in my mind. And I love rock and roll, so that's very exciting. But anyways, how this ties into astrotheology, or why I have come to appreciate astrotheology, is the letter that Jack Williams wrote to my mom. Every other word is, you know, every other sentence has Jesus this, Jesus that, the Lord this, and the Lord has that. And they are extremely devout Pentecostal Christians. So I'm like, in addition to not wanting to, like, bawl my head off the first time I talk to him, I'm also just worried that they're not going to like me. Like, when they find out, you know, I'm Kick-Ass Witch and I have this show called Hippie Witch, and I'm sure that that's very much against what they believe, and they might think I'm whatever, a Satan worshiper going to hell. You know, that's kind of how I imagine that's going to go. And I do have that on the family that I'm involved with. They're Mennonite brethren, so I'm kind of used to that. But Pentecostal is, you know, a whole other thing. So I'm really intimidated by that. And so that's how we come back around to astrotheology, because astrotheology has kind of, in a way, helped me make friends with this extreme Christianity that I come from. It's not, they're not just Christians. They're hardcore. Like, it's a part of everything they do, all their conversations, all their meals, their whole life revolves around this. So today's show is especially close to my heart because besides Joe's family being Pentecostal, like I said, I come from and am very much still entwined and in love with a family of devout Christians. So for my family, Easter and all its surrounding holy days, Passover included, is one of two really important holidays, the other being Christmas. And both are reserved exclusively for Christ. So, I mean, we do an Easter egg hunt every year, but my mom has a way of giving even that a Christian twist. So, for instance, like, one year she hid, you know, those colored plastic eggs that you can get at the grocery store that you're supposed to open up and find candy inside. Instead of candy, one year, you know, did our Easter egg hunt. We were all excited, and we sat down to see what was inside these plastic eggs, and we got rocks and sticks and thorns and stuff like that. And then she, like, gathered us kids around, like my sister, myself, and my cousins, and then she used the odd and rather disappointing contents of our Easter eggs to tell the whole crucifixion and resurrection story. So, yeah, good times at 2809 Hempstead, Bakersfield, California. And obviously my own personal spirituality has evolved dramatically since I left Christianity in a huff as a teen and then slowly regrouped over the years piece by piece from that resulting confusion of, you know, living in that so thoroughly and then leaving, you have like a lot of guilt and confusion. It takes a lot of years to develop your own way of being in the world. But I am happy to say now that my own concepts of God and my spiritual practice has arrived at a place in which I can see and even embrace my family's religion as being valid, as being a legitimate path to the divine, as I believe all paths lead to the divine, God, goddess, the ineffable mystery that is the universe. So my spirituality can embrace their religion as another path to the divine. Like I just said, all paths lead to the divine, but their religion cannot embrace mine, which is sad on some levels. But I've made friends with that, and growing up in that religion, I do understand why that is. And what I found now, thanks to astrotheology, is holidays like Easter are actually a prime opportunity to bridge this gap, if only in my own mind. And I will better explain what astrotheology is here in a minute. But when I first stumbled upon it, it was a relief that it did not further widen the gap that I felt was between me and the Christianity I was raised in, and that kind of just made me so miserable when I would go to these family gatherings for holidays. And in fact, it actually lessened it dramatically. So I can now look at the Bible as more than just a compilation of patriarchal myths designed to control the masses. I can see that it holds, like, a ton of valuable symbolism, especially when you consider it as kind of the book of the Piscean Age, chock full of Pisces and fish symbolism. So astrotheology has allowed me to appreciate Easter and Christmas on a whole other level. And, of course, I don't, like, share these insights with my family when we're all sitting around the table, but they make it a lot easier to get along with everybody and get through these family gatherings, you know, without rolling my eyes. I can see the Passover as a time to celebrate the rising sun and the resulting resurrection of life, plants, earth, animals, which is reflected in the story of Jesus rising from the tomb, just as spring rises from the tomb of winter. I can get into that on a metaphorical level without rolling my eyes and making my family feel like I'm judging them or inviting them to judge me. You know, I can just be cool and go along with it and not ruffle any feathers. And it doesn't feel like it used to, where I felt like I was like biting my tongue and I really wanted to tell them what was up. Like, I get it now, and I can just go with the flow better, and we all get along better for it. You know, they say to be understood, you must first seek to understand. And I don't know if my family will ever understand me, but we can love each other just the same, and we can celebrate these holidays together, even though we are looking at them through a completely different lens. And you know what's funny? When I was a kid, our church did an Easter sunrise service every year where they would have service as the sun was rising, which is so telling now looking back on where these Christian holidays originated according to astrotheology. They originated in the movements of the sun and moon and all visible heavenly bodies. So like I said earlier, the Passover was originally about the sun literally passing over the equator on its way back to the northern hemisphere. It's about the birth of spring and new life, and things just get more and more interesting from there, because once it reaches the northern hemisphere at the Passover, it's in the constellation of Virgo. So the son of God, is seemingly born of a virgin. Ding, ding, ding. Does that ring any bells? I know it does if you were raised Christian, or if perhaps you're a pagan who is into Egyptian mythology, you know, Horus? Anyone? I'm sure some of you are nodding your head wildly out there right now. This stuff is so, it all just starts tying in together, pantheism and paganism and astrotheology. And then if you come from a Christian background or a Hebrew background, you can start to tie these things in together, and it all just starts making so much sense, and it's a lot of fun. So I was first introduced to astrotheology, I think, by Jan Ervin. I had been watching some YouTube videos about it, and he has his own show that's much more popular than mine called Gnostic Media. I don't know if you've ever heard it. It's a really interesting show. And I got to talking to him on the internet one day, and we agreed to meet up for dinner to talk about this stuff. And he actually brought me a copy of his book, Astrotheology and Shamanism, Christianity's Pagan Roots. And he is not a Christian. He is not a pagan. He's just really, he's a seeker, I would say. He's always on the hunt for truth, and he's very intense about it. And he's definitely a believer in astrotheology and the fact that he believes that Christianity and other Abrahamic religions come from astrotheology. And so his book was really the first, I guess, in-depth look at this subject. He also has a video on the subject on YouTube, if you prefer to get your information that way. It's not as thorough, obviously, as the whole book, but there I think it's called The Pharmacratic Inquisition. And that's a cool video. I might have even seen the video before I read the book. But he's a very intense, interesting guy. It was fun to meet him in person. It was fun to get, you know, a free copy of his book and have him sign it for me. And that is just one of the benefits of living in a city like Los Angeles. You get to meet some very interesting characters. And anyways, that got me really deeper. It got me deeper into the work of people like Jordan Maxwell and David Icke, for better and worse. People like Manly P. Hall, who came along before those guys. Manly P. Hall, if you're interested in like a very scholarly, kind of dry approach to this stuff, he has a 9-hour lecture called Astrotheology that you can find on YouTube, I think, still. And he's a super interesting character as well. He's been dead for a long time, so I won't be meeting him anytime soon. But he had a vast, amazing collection of books, and he opened something called the Philosophical Research Center, I believe it's called, and that's also here in L.A., very close to my house. And that place is crazy. It reminds me of Roman Polanski's Ninth Gate, you know, that movie. Going into the Philosophical Research Center is a little bit or Society, maybe it's called, PRS, I can't remember. But it's a little bit like going into the Ninth Gate and like being surrounded by all of these really, really old, fascinating, out-of-print books on the occult and all this stuff. And that guy was amazing. But anyway, many of these people, the people who are deeply into astrotheology, for me, they eventually kind of spoil their integrity, for lack of a better word, by veering off into these wild, you know, conjectures and developing some fairly outlandish conspiracy theories about lizard people and stuff. But they're also very bright, research-oriented people who love to make connections, which I totally relate to. I love to make connections like this and see how things are all related and, you know, search for the truth and dig, dig, dig. I think sometimes they just get so obsessive about it and dogmatic that they just start like, woo, like losing it and getting into a lot of stuff that I think is a little out there, but I may sound out there to you. So I guess out there is a matter of perspective. But I try to hold on to that part of their work that is more research-based and then just throw out whatever kind of stinks to me, which is what I do with most religions and philosophies anyway. So I don't see why astrotheology should be any different. At its heart, it ties in quite, you know, nicely, like I said, with my pantheistic perspective that nature is divine. If nature is divine, all things are, including ourselves. It would stand to reason that we can learn a lot about ourselves and cultural patterns even by observing the patterns of nature, because as above, so below. It's all very witchy. And this is why I can sort of in my own witchy way get into my family's Christian perspective. I get it now on a symbolic, metaphorical level. Jesus is the Son of God, S-U-N. God's Son is the light of the world. And as Jordan Maxwell points out, I like some of his work, some of it not so much, but another word for sky is heaven. And so God's Son, S-U-N, resides up in heaven. Yay! I think that is just so neat. I was way on fire about this stuff when I first figured this all out and learned all of this. And Jordan Maxwell, he actually helped me to see how the Bible can be seen as being largely about astrology and symbolism. It's very fascinating if you think about it from that perspective. And even if you do a really basic search, like at Wikipedia, you come up with some really cool information. So I cut and pasted some stuff from Wikipedia here. Some of it I'll just paraphrase for you because it gets really boring otherwise. But Wikipedia says the term astrotheology is used in the context of 18th to 19th century scholarship aiming at the discovery of the original religion, particularly primitive monotheism, unlike astrolatry, which I don't really know, which blah, 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 blah. Let's skip all over that. Blah, blah, blah. Skip, 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 skip. Astrotheology is any religious system founded upon the observation of the heavens. There, a sentence we can grab onto. Astrotheology is any religious system founded upon the observation of the heavens. Astrology is the study of the astronomical origins of religion, how gods, goddesses, and demons are personifications of astronomical phenomena such as lunar eclipses, which we just had last night, planetary alignments, and apparent interactions of planetary bodies with the stars. So cool. And then it goes on to talk about different scholars and people who have kind of given astrotheology a place. So it says the term astrotheology appears in the title of a 1714 work by William Durham, Astrotheology, or a Demonstration of the Being and Attributes of God from a Survey of the Heavens. And let's see, 1783, there was an issue. I didn't even know these magazines existed back there. 1783, there was an issue of the New Christians magazine that had an essay entitled Astrotheology, which argued the demonstration of sacred truths. truth, there's that word again, from a survey of heavenly bodies. And then in 1855, Edward Higginson linked the Jewish astrotheology of the Hebrew Bible, which places God and his angelic hosts in the heavens, with a scientific astrotheology based on observations of the cosmos. And then Wikipedia goes on to talk about Manly P. Hall. I should read you this. This is interesting. I hope I'm not boring you guys. This interests me a lot. So Manly P. Hall was around in the 1900s, and he taught that each of the three main Abrahamic faiths had a planet that governed that religion. So Judaism is Saturn. The symbol of Judaism is a hexagram symbol of Saturn, and the day of worship is on Saturday, day of Saturn. Christianity is the sun. The symbol of Christianity is the cross symbol of the sun, and the day of worship is Sunday, day of the sun. And then Islam is Venus, the symbol of Venus. The symbol of Islam is the star and crescent, which is a symbol commonly thought to represent Venus, you know, the morning star or the evening star, however you want to look at it. And the day of worship is on Friday. So that's super cool. And then D.M. Murdoch, the only woman that I know of that is frequently mentioned in this area of study, she more recently released a book on the subject and teaches the connections between the solar allegory and the life of Christ. And like I've been saying, Christ is the Son of God. And she also goes beyond the astronomical comparisons and postulates ties between the origins of many of the early Abrahamic religions to ancient mythologies of that in Egypt, Rome, and Greece, which I think if you're pagan, you will easily be able to see those links. And, yeah, then it goes on to mention Jan Irvin and Jordan Maxwell, as I already talked about. Some guy I don't know, Andrew Rutaji, maybe. He talks about the earliest known forms of religion and nature worship. And that's also what Jan Irvin gets into in astrotheology and shamanism. His is not merely about what's happening up in the heavens. It also has a lot to do with mushrooms, Amanita muscaria specifically, which is a fascinating read. Got me super into that mushroom and learning as much as I could. It's a really popular symbol around the time of Christmas, and he explains why. You know, Christmas is when the sun dies and is born again, but so is Easter in a way. And he's got a little passage here in the book that is super fascinating to me. It says, "The sun in the sky is truly our savior. It saves us from a sure death by giving its energy to us. Like all stars, someday our sun will also burn out. Consequently, the sun is quite literally giving its life so that we may live." So you can see probably how this ties in very neatly with Christianity and Christ, or if you're from another Abrahamic religion, you can do some research and see the links there. And I don't think that you have to, if you are a Christian and you've made it through this entire episode, huge high fives to you. I hope you're not throwing eggs at your screen. But I don't think you have to, like, throw the baby Jesus out with the bathwater. I think you can, it can deepen your love of Christ if you see it from this. You could even say maybe as above, so below. Maybe Christ was a real figure, and his life and his teachings just reflected what was going on in the heavens. I think that that is a perfectly legitimate perspective to have, and I'm open to all possibilities. So, hey, I don't see why not. I don't see why not. So, you know, maybe this will help you celebrate Easter this year with your family if you have a Christian family or even just a more secular family who just likes to focus on the Easter bunny and the Easter eggs. It's fun and interesting to know a little bit about astrotheology and where we get these traditions and these religions. At least it makes it fun for me, and I have found that it's an awesome way to connect with my Christian family. So maybe it can do that for you, too. I hope that you are enjoying these still fairly early days of spring, and I send you much love. Peace.